All right. Today is Monday, August 28th, 2023. Yesterday was the 27th. We began Shia for this year. And I hope we got off to a good running start, Baruch Hashem. Now, just a word of introduction about this class. As I said yesterday, the Response to Literature class began in 1978, and it's ongoing. At that time, all the students in the Kollel never missed a class of mine. That went on for about, I would say, 35 years. Lately, my classes are viewed as being beyond the purview of the knowledge they have to have and beyond them, which is sad, but that's the reality. I do have many students online, and YU Torah adds thousands. In 1980, the students came to me. I don't think this is working. In 1980, the students came to me and asked me to add another class that would be outside Shas and Paiskim and Shelet and Shuvat. And I began a class on the Rav, which lasted for 22 years. When I finished the classes on the Rav, which gave birth to my two volumes on my Rebbe, I spent another 4 years giving a survey course on the history of Torah in modern times. When that was completed, I spent 10 years on questions students have asked me. And after that, I think it was 14 years on the history of Torah in the United States. We finished that the middle of last year, and I began a new series on the history of Torah, the yeshivat in Eastern Europe before World War II. I gave an introduction, and then I chose the first yeshiva I would cover. I didn't go chronologically, but I rather took a yeshiva that I consider a mate mitzvah because nobody knows about it today. And we began with Yeshivat Chachmei Lublin. I want to pick up now exactly where I left off, but I'll give a brief introduction so those that are new to the class will be able to follow everything. Reb Meir Shapiro, and let me give his years once again, 1887-1933, a very brief life, basically 46 years of age. Reb Meir Shapiro saw that after World War I, Judaism was breaking down. And this is a sad story. It's not for now. We've spoken about it many times. But the Chilul Shabbat became rampant. Kids from fine Hasidish homes were caught up with all the isms of the day. Jews stood at the head of not just Zionism or secular Zionism, religious Zionism. Lahavdil from religious Zionism, they also stood at the head of socialism, Bolshevikism, communism, Bundesism. The Jews were right there. And a lot of kids were caught up with these ideologies. Reb Meir Shapiro decided to do something very different and very innovative and to organize a yeshiva, and I'll use a term that says it all, pan-Hasidic. When I say pan-Hasidic, I mean that it was in Poland, and the majority of Poland were Gera Hasidim and Chatkova Hasidim, etc. But he wanted to organize a yeshiva for Hasidim, but not put it into a particular court. Until then, in every Hasidic court, there were shayurim and there were young people, junge Leute, was haben gesitzen, gelernt, that sat and learned. But it was Bells, it was Ger, it was Chutkov, it was Ruchin, Sadegera, etc. And this yeshiva, in order to be accepted, you had to be Hasidish, your dress, your face. I couldn't be accepted into the yeshiva, clean shaven, an Oislaf, a Trumpenik, a Litvak. It made every Hasid feel at home. There were separate minyanim. Breslov had a separate minyanim. I gather everyone else davened in one big minyan. but Breslov was separate, but nevertheless the classes were integrated. No Hasidus was taught formally. The idea of the yeshiva was to raise Gedolei Yisrael. In order to get into the yeshiva, you had to know 200 Daf Gemara. There are various stories, whether you had to know it by heart or simply be able to answer questions. I have an email here from my dear Talmud Steve Gross, who quotes Rabbi Baumel from Crown Heights. Rabbi Baumel told me by the age of 13, he and his chavruta had learned all of Shulchan Aruch, Hilchot, Basa v'Cholav, with all the pre-Megadim. So that gives you an idea who we're talking about. That's Rabbi Baumel. He built a beautiful shul in Yeshiva of Crown Heights, beautiful building. There was a big Young Israel there. Crown Heights was a very special community before Chabad came there. Today it's Chabad that survives in Crown Heights, and everything else is very secondary, if at all. And this was Yeshivat Chachmei Lublin. If I can make an analogy, I made an analogy last year, and the new generation that doesn't understand this, Rav Meir Shapiro reminds me of Rabbi Shlomo Riskin or Steve Riskin in his youth. Steve and I were contemporaries. I think he's a year or two younger than I am. And we were in yeshiva together, the Rav Shir together. And Riskin was innovative. You have no idea. He was heads and shoulders above the rest of us. Lincoln Square, the synagogue, to you take it for granted today, how it began and the whole story with the conservative movement. And he came in and, wow, he was a star, a boy wonder, they called him. He did more than that. He had plans of building a day school and a high school and a base medrash and a smicha program and a high school for girls, boys. You don't remember this. And he was getting off the floor. He was a threat. Yeshiva University was shaking. And then he had the tragedy. His second in command died very young. And while dancing with students, it was a sad story. And from that point on, there was no replacement. You see, in America, you have a big problem. No one wants to go into chinuch. Chinuch is considered a bidyavet. Anyone who has brains, my time was becoming, all my top classmates became medical doctors. All right, I am not ashamed. I graduated summa cum laude, number one in my class, but I was the exception that proved the rule. What, Rothkopf is off the wall, he's becoming a rabbi, he wants to teach Torah. Gotta make money, have to be successful. Today it's I Sim School that captures all the minds as I see. Doesn't make me happy, but that's the reality. In America, you couldn't find replacement when Pennyback died. At that point, I guess, Steve, Rabbi Riskin, decided, Aliyah's my future. Maybe Vicky decided. Generally speaking, it's a Medrash Rabbah, Akol Acharei HaIsha. In French, they say, Sheche La Femme. And as my wife pulled me in Aliyah, I would give Vicky the credit, and they came in Aliyah. And here, he totally succeeded because there are endless young men, young women, who feel the calling to go into chinuch. Okay, and this was Reb Meir Shapiro. He was revolutionary. That comparison to Rabbi Riskin, the 60s, the 70s, 80s, is a very good comparison. When you're revolutionary, you create opposition. People view the Reb Meir Shapiro, how is he smarter than previous generations? And this brings us to the end of yesterday's shir, where Reb Menashe Klein goes crazy with people who are using a computer to check a Sefer Torah, using a light table to check lettuce, want to use an x-ray machine to check whether the animal is treif or not, if you can drink the milk, versus given good from Tatun, say that that's not good for us. You know Yiddish? Abyssal. My great-grandchildren, Yechid, can an abyssal, big deal. Your question has to be how I know Yiddish. And that's a different story. Read my seventh book and you'll understand how I know Yiddish. Washington. Actually, in my article coming out now, my research paper, I don't know what to call it, it's more than an article, it's 70 pages in Chakira, you'll understand also how I know Yiddish. You'll see the dedication. So this is how Chachmei Lublin began. And people criticize Rav Meir Shapiro. What is he, an innovator? What is he, a reformer? What was good enough for my father, my grandfather, is not good enough for us? And this is how Chachmei Lublin began. Now, he also raised a fortune of money. And here, too, there was criticism. Whoever heard of raising millions of dollars to build a yeshiva with a dormitory, a dining room, a mikveh? In those days, it was unheard of. You ate in people's homes. You slept in people's homes. Whoever heard of an organized system? What's interesting for us, sitting in this campus that a guy named Rakefet got for Yeshiva University, Rav Meir Shapiro, in his fundraising, went to visit Yeshiva, what became Yeshiva University, went to visit Rabbi Revel, and wanted to see how you build a dorm, how you build a cafeteria. And a lot of Chachmei Lublin, the ideas came from what was happening in Washington Heights. All the years fit together. I don't have time to do it in detail now. Now, and this was Rav Meir Shapiro. The yeshiva got off the floor and it produced gaonim. We'll talk about them, if not today, in future sheyurim. It succeeded on that level. The most difficult part was that the yeshiva was featured around one individual. With the premature death of Rav Meir Shapiro in 1933, and remember, the yeshiva opened its doors in 1930, there never was a replacement for Rav Meir Shapiro. He was the yeshiva, he was the mashgiach, he was the administrator, he was the fundraiser. It was all Rav Meir Shapiro. The world, of course, remembers Rav Meir Shapiro, and yesterday was 100 years since the Daf Yomi was announced at the Agudah Convention. And without redoing Yossi Meisher last year, Rav Meir Shapiro, and he was not the person who came up with the idea. There were forerunners, but Rav Meir Shapiro publicized it. More than that, he was smart enough to put an organization behind the idea. And it was announced 100 years ago yesterday at the Knesiyah Gedolah of Agudat Yisrael, the first Knesiyah Gedolah, 1923 in Vienna. I read recently, see, the Gentiles in Eastern Europe are not stupid. We're stupid. We spend a fortune. We're visiting graves. We're visiting shrines. You have money? Come to Israel. No, we're running to Europe. The Goyim make a fortune off us. And I understand that the theater, which was then the venue for the Agudat Yisrael Knesiyah Gedolah, they're turning it into a showcase museum. Here's where the Daf Yomi was announced. Here's where the Knesiyah Gedolah took place. And they'll make a lot of money of Jews running back to stand at cemeteries. I don't know, I have a different concept. I'm a Talmud of the Gaon, I'm a Talmud of the Rav. If any of you know anything about the Rav and the Gaon, the last place in the world they would go to would be a cemetery. Okay, but I've given shurim. Every word I say, I can speak for hours. It's not for now, and it never is. I have to move forward. The Daf Yomi will eternally be identified with Rav Meir Shapiro. will eternally be identified with Yachal, and many of the graduates of Yachal who survived Hitler would later give shiurim all over the world on Daf Yomi. More or less, although many claim Rabbi Mirsky began, which is probably true, but it's the Lublina who brought the Daf Yomi to America. A Talmud, David Sukenik, sent me an interesting quintessence. My grandfather learned in Yeshiva Chachmei Lublin, and this was a quintessence that came out right after Rav Meir Shapiro died, Maran Zichrono Livracha. Evidently the Talmidim put it out, and here you have the official announcement on the Daf Yomi. And here you have what I told you last term, when the Daf Yomi was announced. So people listened, were quizzotic, yes, no, who knows, will it take off, won't it take off? And Rosh Hashanah, 3 weeks after it was announced yesterday, was the first time you have to start learning Bracha, Daf Bet Amid Aleph Amid Bet. And right after davening Leil Rosh Hashanah, the Gerer Rebbe said to his Gabayim, Ich nemzest jetzt a Meseches Brachis and ich fein on Leiden the Daf Yomi. And it went out, the word went out all over Poland that the Gerer Rebbe told his Gabayim that he's beginning Daf Yomi. No, Eib the Rebbe tanzen ala Chassidim. Eib the Rebbe essen ala Chassidim. Eib the Rebbe daven ala Chassidim. Eib the Rebbe lernen Daf Yomi, lernen in ala Chassidim. And that's exactly what happened. Every Gerer picked it up. Now, with this Chachmei Lublin and how it began and the Daf Yomi and Agudat Yisrael, it took off. Who knows what would have been had Rav Meir Shapiro lived on, and we have to add something else, of course, the Holocaust. And here you come to a question that haunts us, and I've in my forthcoming article, you'll see what I write and the footnotes I give you. But here, this brings me back to my very youth, and I'm beginning new material now. I was all of 12 years old. And some of you that have followed my Shayurim for the last, since 1978, ongoing in the Kollel, and as I mentioned yesterday, I spent 5 years in the Sunday class on Shelet and Shuvit from the Holocaust, Responsa Literature. So, people always ask me, it's like you went through the Holocaust. You didn't. You're a third generation American. And here's where you have to understand something. I went through the Holocaust. I went to school. My parents switched me again. I assume you have read Washington and know that volume by heart. Avi, if you don't know Washington by heart, you don't know how to breathe air. I quoted one line from it yesterday. That's enough to teach you how to breathe air. You know what line I'm talking about, Jesse. The framework and the picture. So my classes, half the class were kids from Yiddish-speaking homes who ran away from Hitler in the late 30s. After 45, half the class were survivors. You all know Rabbi Braunschweigel, Zeichet Tzadik Livracha. There's a classic example. And I have to say, the fact that I went to school with these people and suffered with them and understood them, that played a big role. You saw yesterday in class was a day dedicated to Russian Jewry. No, you get a call from the Mossad, a secretive call, and they ask you to go to Russia to risk your life. There's not a, you have no idea. Take a look. Who did Putin just kill? I mean, who are we talking about? The whole plane went down. 10 people, I think, killed to get at the head of the Wagner Group. Soviet Union, not a simple matter. And I can tell you right away that my wife and I felt we had to go. We couldn't go into the Warsaw Ghetto to save Jews, but at least we have a chance of coming out alive with our American passport from the Soviet Union. And it was a big motivating factor. But more than that, the first years in Salanta, all my teachers were not total Shomrei Shabbos. Among them, Mechallelei Shabbos 100%. Saw one of them, and imagine, this is the Rebbe who introduced me to Gemara, and I'm fifth grade, and changed my life, of course. I told my great-grandson who's starting Gemara this term, I said, you should know that once I started Gemara, a day has not gone by in my life that I haven't learned Gemara. And they were all Mechallel. What were they doing teaching in Salanta? They needed panasa. They had, many of them had been in business. They went bankrupt. Lo yutzlach lechem. It's a word in modern Hebrew. Lo yutzlach lechem. And but they had learned in their youth, and they were Zionists, and they taught in Salanta. Suddenly, in seventh grade, I have a Rebbe from China. I didn't know whether he was or what. They love it. Say, you don't know who that man was. All right. I break my teeth to learn Yiddish. He didn't speak a word of English. I didn't speak a word of Yiddish. Eighth grade, I had Reb Chenech Fishman. I was 12 years old. I have to say, Reb Chenech, Zeichet Tzadik Levracha, treated me like an adult. And the problems he discussed with me are problems that have occupied my intellectual curiosity until this very moment. And it all goes back. I was a 12-year-old. I was bar mitzvah in his class. And one of the questions, see, I was a smart kid. I asked him a question that reverberates in the scholarship I'm now publishing. I said, Rebbe, Germany, Hitler took over in the early 30s. Why didn't you try to get out earlier? What did you think was going to happen? And his answer was very straightforward. Very simple. Jews have gone through hell before. Josh, they celebrated Tisha B'Av in West Hempstead. You read the keynote? They cannot there, Shalish Rufa Biesh. Germany, burning Gemaras. You read the keynote on the Rabbi Schwab's keynote on the Shoah and the Holocaust. Other Gedolei Yisrael wrote keynote. We have suffered so much, so we're going to suffer again. How many were killed in the Mechilmekinichimlinikim massacres? They say over 100,000. It had great impact because the Litvakin basically didn't suffer, the Pelishes suffered, and that's how Hasidus was born. The Litvakin remained Lamdunim, they had time to learn, the Polish had to rebuild from scratch, or Greater Poland, and Hasidus came along and saved them spiritually. So he said, Gamzeya Avar. And you see, this is with Yeshiva Chachmei Lublin. You literally cry when you think of what would have been had he built Chachmei Lublin in Israel. Imagine had he built it in Tveria, Tzfat, cities that had a deep Hasidic background already then, in the 1930s. But no, he built it in Poland, and everyone thought it'll survive forever. And no one could dream. And I have to tell you, what Rav Chenech Fishman told me is exactly what others have written. It's not just Rav Chenech Fishman. You've heard the name Harav Dr. Zerach Vahavtik. YU turns out products today that, wow. they upset me. Knowledge, at your age, knowledge, all right. You'll get there, you'll all get there. How old are you?
25.
20, oh my gosh, at your age. Don't even want to tell you, I had smicha from YU and from Gedolei Yisrael, from Rav Lessin, Alsa. A bachelor's, two masters, a doctorate. 25 years old and not to know who Zerach Vachavtik was. All right. If not for Zerach Vachavtik, me, Yeshiv, Debbie, none of us would be here today in this room. He's the one, more than anyone, that pressured them to take the Sungiharo visas. And he later goes on, he was a big Talmud Chacham, he was a Litvishi Yeshiva man, but he was a religious Zionist. And he later settles in Israel, becomes a member of the Mizrahi, a member of the Knesset, a governmental figure for many years. Go to Harav Hagon, Google, type in the name Zerach Vachavtik, and you'll see who we're talking about. He wrote a memoir, Saridu Palit Bimei Shawai. There's an English translation, by the way. I have it in the original, but there's an English translation. And he writes the same thing, that we all thought, it'll pass. Gamzeya Avar. And he said this was the tragic mistake of the yeshivat. Thousands could have been saved had they taken the simple Sugihara visas. But many felt, it's not serious, how can it be? What's wrong? We live here, we know here, we speak the language. Teaneck is my home, I know how to bank here, I have my doctors here, I know how to get across the George Washington Bridge, my relatives are here, we don't leave, all right, we have problems. Gamzeyavar. Binyamin Mintz, a volume I read was written about him. The name Binyamin Mintz, Yad Binyamin, who is it named for? Binyamin Mintz, who is Binyamin Mintz? Pole Agudat Yisrael, Agera Chassid, who was a Zionist. It's very hard in those days to be a Agera Chassid and be a Zionist. Ultimately, it killed him, lo aleinu. Hi, you know what I'm talking about when I say ultimately it killed him? Is the Rebbe making it up or am I telling you facts? Facts, underline the F. He entered the Israeli government as the Minister of Transport and Mayor, whatever it was called, and the Gerer Rebbe was opposed. And for Gerer Chassid to have his Rebbe opposed him, he had a heart attack a few months later and died, lo aleinu. So in the biography about Binyamin Mintz, they quote as he was a very popular writer in the Yiddish press, and he wrote, yes, the Jews are suffering, but it'll pass. Exactly the same concept. And even his wife, she went back to visit her parents in Poland. Only with miracles were they able to save her life. And you see, this is what Rabbi Chanuch Nishman told me, and wow, was he correct. And Chachmei Lublin, they thought they would be there forever. L'kaved u'l'tiferet, the yeshiva is blossoming. Okay, now, let me tell you what happened. We'll spend the rest of this year, basically, what happened after Rav Meir Shapiro died. And you see, here you have a tremendous problem when a yeshiva is oriented around one individual. This takes us to a problem that we have dealt with a thousand times over. There are two types of yeshiva in the world. By the way, I want to tell you, anyone can bring breakfast to shir or brunch, whatever it is, eat slowly and relax. More important to be here and enjoy your food and let your ears take in a little bit knowledge. You see, there are two types of yeshivat. Some yeshivat are a public trust. A public trust, like Harvard, like Yale, Yeshiva University, Teira Vidas. These yeshivat, You don't have to be related to the Rosh Yeshiva to teach them, to be a Rebbe, to be a Rosh Yeshiva. If you have the ability, you can rise. It's a public trust. It's not a family institution. I'm sitting behind this desk. 40 years after I did my doctorate did I find out I have the best yichus in YU's world. There's no one else alive who equals my yichus. No, Natan told the class. Exactly. My whole doctorate is a farce. I wrote a doctorate on my own cousin. Where Kalvariskis found that out. A volume written in Israel revealed the secret to me. I spoke with the author. I don't. It's not for now. Look for the introduction to the fourth edition of Bernard Rebbe. You'll see what I write there. But believe, when people say to me, Rabbi Aaron Lichtenstein was the Rav's son-in-law, I smack their face. Yes, they tell me why. It's like implying Aaron Lichtenstein only got anywhere because he was the Rav's son-in-law. Aaron Lichtenstein was a gadol shebigdolim. The Rav bench Geimel when he got him for a son-in-law. Plain and simple. And I'm not exaggerating. I know what I'm saying. You ask me Friday night, I'll give you more details. The microphone doesn't have to pick up everything. The Dai Lechakima. You thought that's why you. Who's Vic, who's the Rosh Yeshiva in Torah V'Das today? Yitzi Lichtenstein. It's unbelievable. They had to get someone to put them on the map again. How does he come to Torah V'Das? Moriu Rebbe, the Rav's grandson. Ron Lichtenstein's son. That they need. See, family affairs, you got to be related. If you're not related, you don't fit in. And these institutions will rise and fall. I can give you many examples. TELS. TELS in America? No, go to Cleveland. There's almost nothing left. Because it was family-oriented. The family, the third generation in America did not produce. Their branches, particularly Chicago, is infinitely more successful than the mother unit in Cleveland. That's one example. There are many examples. Mir in Brooklyn, the basement, who heard of it today? Lakewood is fascinating, because Lakewood also was family. Kletz, Rabbi Sazama Meltzer, who was his son-in-law, Rabbi Aaron Cutler. But Lakewood, it not only blossomed after Rabbi Aaron's death, but it became, today Lakewood is, it's not just a yeshiva, it's an umbrella. Tens of yeshiva, chabura, thousands of students. And not all mayor, Lakewood is very broad today. I was honored by, and I had a tour, and I couldn't believe the Lakewood of today. But it's not the Lakewood of Rabaran's yeshiva. See, Rabaran the yeshiva was totally centered on Rabaran Cutler. If you were in Lakewood, you learned with Rabaran Cutler. Today, there are four Rashi yeshiva, each one gives a shiur, what's it, one week out of four. One week. And they rotate, right? Okay. I know in Mir they finally acknowledged that Rabbi Ariel is the focal figure. But you see, these institutions today, not so much Lakewood, but Mir has become more of a communal institution. People have risen to the top, not related. When Rabbi Meir Shapiro died, you immediately have this problem. He was the yeshiva. The yeshiva was him. Now, some of the people that take over, and no one ever really succeeded him. But there was one individual who helped put the yeshiva on the map more than anyone. And this was his Talmud, By the way, I have to tell you, and everyone who studied with me last year knows what I'm talking about, I have in my office a PhD thesis that was done by Rabbi Dr. David Slovin, or Slavin, I should say, S-L-A-V-I-N, from Sydney, Australia. And a lot of what I'm telling you, I'm a wise man because of his doctorate. And I have a bit of a share in it. I was scholar in residence in Australia. I was there for a month with my wife in 2000. Half the time in Melbourne and half the time in Sydney. And I got to know that, and I encouraged him. He's a Chabadnik, but he's a Chabadnik with a PhD. I don't know how many Chabadnikins you have that have a PhD, and he did a wonderful job in the thesis. And he asked, if you call my shroom last year, he had a direct connection, because his grandfather, David Mintzberg, was Ke'ena Mashkiach in Yeshivat Chachman Lublin. When they came to America, his father, the generation above him, became Chabadnikim. But he had a connection, and he wrote a wonderful doctorate. So Aaron Liebwohl, L-E-B-W-H-O-L, was one of Reb Meir Shapiro's top students. He married Reb Meir Shapiro's niece. Now, there were two brothers. There was Reb Meir, and he had a brother, Gittel, the only daughter of his brother, Avraham. And you see, it's also interesting, they say sterility is not inherited. But sometimes you see families where they don't have children. A simple example is the Elephant family. Mordechai Elephant and his brother could have no children. It's interesting. Their sister had children, and the sister's granddaughter is married to a grandson of someone named Aaron Rakefet. But the brothers had no children. Here, the two brothers produced one daughter, Gittel. And she married Reb Avraham. Now, what's interesting, let me just keep my papers in order, because yesterday this is the start. Let me do it this way. She married Reb Avraham. He not only was a Talmud Mufak of Reb Meir Shapiro, but being a nephew by marriage, a Talmud and a nephew, Reb Meir Shapiro depended upon him. And he played a key role in sustaining the yeshiva. Now, what's fascinating about him is he was so close to Reb Meir and so loyal to Reb Meir and so inspired by the Maram Lublin. I quote to you, he was an effective public speaker, just like Reb Meir Shapiro. He emulated Reb Meir Shapiro's speaking style. His handwriting, his bodily movements, his gestures in prayer. And I can tell you I understand this as well as anyone. The greatest compliment I ever got in my life, there's someone who works downstairs, Jonathan Cohn. Go to Jonathan, he'll tell you the story. His grandfather was Rabbi Meir Feldman of Brooklyn, a very hush of a RCA Rav. His final years, he came to Israel. I was much younger, and today I only teach in the Kollel. I just don't have the energy to go beyond, to travel, etc. Well, I was speaking once at the OU, and while I'm speaking, he's crying, Rabbi. I was a kid, he's a famous rabbi. Comes over to me afterwards and says, Rabbi Rakefet, when I hear you, I hear the Rav. And I understand, when I give a drasha, ask Rabbi Bednar, I give a drasha, In this very room, I gave a shiur. About it was the last time we all were here for Shabbos together. We were younger, and Reb Aaron was still healthy. He came over to me afterwards, hugged me. Lo nas lecho. It brought back the memories of the Rav. When you're a Talmud, of course you want to emulate your Rebbe. You've absorbed so much from him. And this Leibwahl, people heard him inspired. More than that. And this is something we alluded to last term in great detail. See, Rav Meir Shapiro came from a wealthy home. He never lacked for anything. When you come from a wealthy home, you're not a schnurrer. You can walk with pride. I remember I was in Chicago. I was Masadik edition for a Talmud. This goes back 1990. Masadik edition for a Talmud. He married a girl from a Heit Satmar family, a big Satmar family. Well to do. And I'm a Masadik edition. I speak at the Sheva Brachot. And the mother of the Kala goes over to the Chatan. The father was gone already. And she says, I want to write out a check for your Rebbe's institution. And the Chatan, my Talmud, says, Mama, you don't have to write anything. He works for Yeshiva University. He doesn't have to raise funds. I think my prestige went up unbelievable. I do have to tell you, she came to me afterwards. All in Yiddish, I'll say it in English, I'm living it in Yiddish. She said to me, mein Edom hat mir gesagt, my son-in-law told me, as du hast mir haben Geld für Yeshiva, aber ich will tun etwas für dich. What can I do for you? So I had to write out a check to Shvatami. Okay, if Aryeh Katzin is listening, I think she wrote out a check for $1,800. That's 1990. I never got paid more for being Masadik Kedushin. But I have to be honest, from Talmidim I will not take a penny, so it doesn't matter. But $1,800 for Shvatami. All right, the memoir literature, he gives sources for everything. But the memoir literature, they traveled. He went with other Talmidim of Yachal, Yeshivat Chachmei Lublin, raising funds in Western Europe, Austria, Belgium, Holland, Switzerland. People were blown away by their dignity. Not schnurrers, you follow? Not beggars. When you have to raise funds, it's very sad. And you know, you have to. I remember I once came into an office. This is the Shvutami, a dentist. And I told the secretary, I want to see the dentist. He knows I'm coming. And I sat down with the patients. You know, I'm asking for charity. I can't be arrogant. Later, when he came out, he said, what are you sitting here? You should have had them tell me immediately. You know, he had covered Hatera. But you're asking for funds. If I would have been from Yachal, I would have said to the secretary, tell the dentist that Rabbi Leibwahl from Yeshiva Chachmei Lublin is here to honor him with his presence. You follow? There's a big difference, Yossi, between Chachmei Lublin and Aaron Rakefet asking for funds. And this individual played a big role. The sad part is Hitler. Almost every name that we'll mention, he was killed in the Holocaust, 1943, 34 years of age. One after another, the people who helped. Another Talmud, Mordechai Yehuda Lubat, and he was an Eloi, a Pilish, a kid, and so often his mother gave him permission to leave her, go to Chachmei Lublin. That's the place to be. And he comes in for his test and goes back and forth, knows Masechta by heart. And suddenly the Marablim stops him and says, well, you say it's Daf Yud Chet. By the way, everything I'm telling you, there's a source in the doctorate. And the Maran Lubin says to him, no, maybe it's Daf Yud Zion. And the kid says, no, I think, but now he's worried, maybe his memory is off. And the Maran Lubin tells him, you're absolutely right. I was just trying to see if you would stand your ground. Now this kid, this is from memoir literature, was such a matmid, he never left the Beit Medrash. Basically, the Maram Lublin instituted hours like the Chofetz Chaim, their famous stories, I don't know in YU, but the lights go out at a certain time. You're supposed to get a good night's sleep, whatever it is, 6 hours, 7 hours. He would bring candles to continue learning. And one time, the person who survived and became a Rav in Borough Park and wrote the memoir, one time he sees him walking in town. And he was flabbergasted. This is the great matmid, and he's walking in town, wasting time. And he found out he had a toothache and was going to the dentist. But you see, Ant Kedei Kach Tachat Mada, that when he was missing and walking in town, they were chayshish, what happened? Where's the Hatmada? Going to the dentist, had a toothache. And he was a Talmud. Then they talk about the same Lubat, and this is the whole problem of the draft, and I can go into talking about the draft. You don't even realize Rav Heschel Schechter, in one of his volumes about the Rav, so he mentions that the Rav was about to be drafted in the Polish army, and that's why he went to Berlin, to run away from the Polish army. You don't know what a storm, going back now to the 1980s, Rabbi Lamb called him in. Rabbi Lamb said, you really believe that? You see, the implication was that the Rav would have never gone to Berlin if not for the fact they were about to draft him into the Polish army. The truth is that the Rav planned to go to Berlin. He was only waiting to be a little older, and he originally wanted to finish his degree in the Free Polish University. But you should know that in my work on the Rav, I worked very hard. I worked very hard, first of all, to tell the truth, and secondly, not to embarrass my chaver from youth, mamish youth. There's only Avishai, Rabbi David, I know a little longer. I was at Rabbi David's Brit Mila. I can't say it was at Rav Heschel's Brit Mila because I was all of 2 years old at the time, but I know him from shortly afterwards. So I have to give Tova Lichtenstein credit. She fine-tuned it and told me to use the word, it was the catalyst. The catalyst, that pushed him to go to Berlin before he finished the university in Poland. Now, you see, why were they afraid about the army? And here you have to understand, the army was a real problem. First of all, it was a problem, Kashrut, Shabbat. Secondly, it was a problem, Shidduchim. They went with the Chazaka, if you went into the army, you came out Eis Frum. It's like the IDF. If you were growing up in 1948 and 1949 and you went into the army, the chazaka was you would come out Eis Frum, and it was a pretty good chazaka. It was probably true 80% of the time. There are reasons why it's not for now. It's not for now. Like, remind me, I want to talk about the contemporary, Morty, at a quarter after, what time is it? A quarter after 10, wave your hand. I need a reminder. So this Lubat, time comes for him to go to the army. By the way, let me see your knowledge. Tell me a Gadol Shebegadolim who served in the army and whose hearing was brought down by the cannons being fired in World War I. And he claimed it was the greatest gift he ever got because he couldn't hear Lashon Hara. Who am I talking about, Jomo? Tell the class. No? The stipler.
Absolutely. The different stories of
how the stipler. I know as a fact with the stipler. This Rav Chaim Kanevsky's father, the stipler Rav, he was in World War I. He couldn't get out of the draft. So Lubart found out there's a Jewish doctor who can give you pills, and if you take them the day you come for your medical interview, you will be have a very high fever, and you can tell the doctor that that high fever is contagious. So he goes to the doctor, and the doctor is frightened stiff, because if anyone finds out, if people know, and obviously people are talking, he can be executed. A traitor. So he was very upset, Lubart, and the doctor's wife saw how upset he was, and she started speaking with him, and she saw as a tire in the shama, such a precious soul, such a masmit, such a talmud chacham. So she told her husband, give him the pill, nothing will happen to you. And that's how he avoided the draft. And survivors told this story about him. Ultimately, the doctor's wife sympathized with the young student. He received the medication, and thereby avoiding army service. Now, with the Maharam's death, these were students, these were survivors. 1 second, 389, 390, 391. The yeshiva continued, but we cannot use the words that it flourished. And everyone was in a state of shock. To show you how deep the state of shock was, the Lublin community did not elect a new chief rabbi again. And Lublin was established, was a community that traced its history hundreds and hundreds of years back, and they always had a chief rabbi, but they could never, the shock, and then World War II, there was no chief rabbi again. They couldn't replace him. I don't want to confuse it with Chabad or Breslov. I would imagine had the Holocaust not come along, and let's say 10 years after his death, the world has to move on. We have to go further. My grandmother taught me this in 52. The Lebedeke Gafdafking Weiter. Those alive have to go further. They would have chosen a chief rabbi. But it shows you the shock at his death. One thing that did improve, and here I want to come in time to the history of where your father and you studied. One thing that did improve after his death was the financial status of the yeshiva. And here we're going to come into an interesting term, modern application. You could do an interesting master's thesis on how this all came about. But let me come back to Lakewood. Reb Aaron Cutler had to fundraise dollar to dollar, door to door. This idea of Lakewood, revolutionary. How many people followed him? A few Balabatim, Irvin Bunim was one. Feuerstein from Boston was another. Sam Feuerstein. He had a handful of Balabatim, but Lakewood takes off. It begins with 12, 13 students. In my time, early 50s, there were 100 students, 110 students. Later, 150. And you have to raise money. There's a biography of Baron Cutler by Yitzchak Dershowitz. Zichrono Levracha. I apologize to the son of the author. In one class I said you about his father. It's lies. I used the word liar. All right, I was a little bit too sharp. It's Art Scroll history with Rebbe Baron's daughter, which really bothers me, Malka. You know what I'm talking about or not? You're not familiar with Yitzchak? That she became a Mizrachiite. His sister, Malka, his older sister, was totally not from. She had become a communist and a professor at Moscow University, later at the Sorbonne. Later, Reb Baron brought it to America, and it's to Reb Baron's great credit, his sister wanted him to leave yeshiva and come to Moscow University. This is where Reb Reuven Gazovsky saves Reb Baron, saves Torah for all of us in this room to a certain degree. And Reb Baron, the sister, and Reb Baron brought it to America, and tremendous kavod. He used to say, this is Ziyat Mirga Chavod, that she raised Reb Baron. He was orphaned, and this was his older sister. But tell the truth, don't it? She was, all right. You want to know how far gone? I mean, this is a true story that I heard. Reb Baron arranged with the Queen's Mafia to have Rabbanim visit his sister once a month. So one time Rabbi Albert gets a call from Rabbi Schoenfeld. Roy, you want to have an interesting experience? Come with me to visit Malka Kotler. And you know, so Roy Albert, Rabbi Yitzchak Albert, Sunnyside, Queens, Rabbi Fabian Schoenfeld. No, you're a rabbi or not. Baruch Hashem, Yassi. You can testify he was alive and unbelievable. I'll take your name after class if you're going to come back, because there were guys here yesterday, and I see one of them didn't come back. All right. I want to be sure, because to learn names, it's like a computer, you understand? I don't want to fill the mind with it. I have people came once and never showed again. I call them voyages. But those who are come back and become my talmidim, that obligates me more than you. You understand? And by the way, anyone who's my Talmud can request a month from now. My two books were reprinted by another Talmud, Chelik Aleph, Chelik Bet of Rakafet Aron. If you're interested, you can request copies from me. Chinam Ein Kesef, because I don't take money from students. But only if you're interested. I don't want to force my books upon anyone, because I've already found books that I gave as gifts in secondhand bookstores. When I bought them back, the Revel, I remember the first edition of Revel, wow, pasted over and gave it again. I hope it survived. Coming back here, so Dershowitz wrote a volume on Reb Baron. It's an interesting volume. It's not a PhD volume, it's an Art Scroll volume. So he writes on Reb Baron and the driver. They go to visit this balabas, and finally he sees them, and he's going to write out a check, I think, for $180. And his son says, Father, what are you doing? This is an institution. I don't believe in him, blah, blah. Father finally gave Reb Baron $25. So in the car, the driver says to Reb Baron, why does the Rosh Yeshiva have to suffer like this? And Reb Baron says, I'm quoting word by word, translation, but word by word. When I give shir, I get excited. Sometimes I yell at a student, I embarrass him. This is a kapara for when I embarrass students. Yossi, you got that or not? You've heard of making of a gull? Tell me the difference between the first edition to the second edition.
The letters?
No, it's in the second edition, too. No?
I have no idea.
Max, what do you say?
I never read any of these books.
M.R.
Wait, what about, I thought that Alex Cutler's sister was a professor at Columbia. Do I have this wrong?
No. When she came to America, I don't believe she taught. I'm pretty sure she was much older. She brought it from France.
Didn't Cutler used to go visit Columbia for some reason? No.
Who visited?
Alex Cutler. Didn't he go visit Columbia or Upper West Side?
Not that I know. He, Upper West Side, he lived.
He lived in Upper West Side?
Yeah, what does that have to do with Columbia?
Okay.
He lived before he moved to Borough Park. Finally, everyone moved to Brooklyn. Rabbi Wozniak had him, had Rabbi Menachem Kasha. You have any idea who lived? Rabbi Shmuel Belkin. Wow. Upper West Side, then Kleinekeit. Gentlemen, the only difference between Chelek Aleph, that I was very close to Rabbi Nosson Kamenetsky, and boy, I told you this a year ago, 2 years ago, 3 years ago. No one remembers. Maybe people listening will say, ah, don't bore us again. It's very simple. Rabbi Aaron was coming back or going to Israel via England. In London, they asked the Rosh Yeshiva to give a shiur. At the shiur, someone with a red beard, now you have a red beard, Natan? Maybe it was you. Someone with a red beard asked the shaila. And the Rosh Yeshiva barked at him, was for a shaila? Was binst du a para aduma? Got it? And the family was embarrassed. And they asked Reb Nosson to take it out. And he took it out. I told Reb Nosson, had Reb Aaron called me a paraduma, I would insist he leave it in big letters. Because the Reb once called me out a fum rabbi. Must be 57, 58. And they found it. My Talmud Aryeh Liebman should live and be well, found it on a tape. I played it for the Kollel here in class. I played it. Imagine the Rav was machshiv me to put me down and call me a reformer. By the way, later in Shia, he softened up. He said, no, Epshir's epistem. Maybe you have something. Maybe you have something. There's a whole thing in Sanhedrin. Gentlemen, the Maram Lublin people realized, why does someone die young? All right, there's illness in the world, cancer. Today, heart trouble, they do miracles with heart trouble, but there are illnesses which we can't overcome. But healthy people die young. Tension, heartache. Rabbi Revel died at 55. My cousin died, it's very simple. The depression, the Holocaust, the pressure on him to raise funds, Yesh Meyayim, to bring over people from Europe. You have no idea the pressure, what went on. And remember, it wasn't simple. You were dealing with the State Department that was anti-Semitic. You were dealing with America that wanted no more Jews, Eastern Europeans. Not simple. And the pressure, he died. He told his wife on his deathbed, you don't measure life by years, but by achievement. Quote, end quote. Maram Lublin traveled all over the world, had to put money together, built the yeshiva. Such a burden. That's what killed him. The people felt very guilty. And they announced, the Gedolei Yisrael, you know, and there were many Litvish and not Litvish, many Chassidische Gebellen affiliated with Yachal, the Biyana, Rableigel, Eger, others, the Chutkova, the Gera, they announced the campaign and they introduced a new concept. I don't know if you can trace how this concept begins in modern times. Kaifa nefesh, that everyone has to give kaifa nefesh. The Gadol Hador died. We deserve to die, not him. We have to give kaifa nefesh. The source, where do you find the source? Natan, Chumash. V'im shonagachu v'heimit isho isha hasho yisakel v'gam ba'alav yumat. I'm quoting from Shmot Perek Chafalev Psukim Chaftet Lamed. Im kofa yushat alav v'natan pidyon nafsho kechol asher yushat alav. And This is the idea. Kaifa Nefesh. And it succeeded. It raised a fortune of money. See, it's like, it's hard to understand this. The Baron Cutler alive, Lakewood suffers financially. Rabbi Aaron Cutler dies, Lakewood went on the map financially. People woke up. The Rav played a big role, by the way, in helping Rav Schneer take over and put Lakewood, brought in his own. The Rav had his balabatim from Moria. A lot of money came into Lakewood. Today, Lakewood is wealthier than Yeshiva University. Headline news this morning. Every Talmud in Lakewood who gets a stipend, who saw the news, raised 5%. Am I telling stories or facts? What do you say, Chaim? Baruch Hashem, the Rebbe is telling facts. Raised 5%. Why you were struggling? It's interesting. Maram Lublin went on all over the world struggling. Take a look. Kofa Nefesh and the yeshiva is raising, handling its budget. Now this idea of Kaifa Nefesh, you see, what does it mean? I have to give Kaifa Nefesh? Yomo had to give Kaifa Nefesh about, what is it, a year and a half ago? 2 years? Yomo, what am I talking about? Is he awake? Yomo. The biggest tragedy we've had in religious Israel. Lag BaOmer. The cave in Et Meron. Yomo was right there. Right there. And you remember what they announced afterwards? Every Jew. Here's a picture of Rav Chaim Kanevsky. Let me see if I can get it close. Rav Chaim Kanevsky writing a check of Kaifa Nefesh. All these people died. We're lucky we're alive. Kol echad ve'echad lo yivchad kofa nefesh misach 430 shekel. How did they get 430 shekel? Nefesh. In gematria. Nefesh make shin is 300. Pei is 80. Nun is 50. 430 shekel. Here's the kol kore. Every Jew, if we're alive, we have to give Kaifa Nefesh 430 shekel. And this, you have no idea what went on. The obligation, the yeshiva, even the poor people came up with money. People were so upset that he's dead and we're alive. Prominent rabbis like the Sadegera Rebbe went around speaking, giving it high profile. The Vishnitzer Rebbe, the Sadegera Rebbe, the entire Russian dynasty issued a statement that we must give Kaifa Nefesh. And then, by the 30s already, you had students of Yachal who already won the rabbinate. And here once again we come to our YU connection. Rabbi Yoshua Baumel, the great uncle, there were two Baumel brothers. One is the grandfather and one is the great uncle. I think this is the grandfather of Rabbi Norman Lamb. And he already, a Talmud, a Rav, raised a fortune of money. Kaifa Nefesh. Aaron Liebwahl is now the administrator and the yeshiva is functioning. Nevertheless, the yeshiva is lacking a Rosh Yeshiva, a central focal figure. And a tremendous search begins. You have no idea how far they were looking, who they were considering. The first part of next week's year will be unbelievably fascinating. Who they were contemplating, who could come and succeed. Some came, some tried out. Some they had to dress up as Hasidim. It's unbelievable. And finally, they found the individual, as you will see next week. Statistically, the one they found and appointed, he was Rosh Yeshiva a year or two longer than Reb Meir Shapiro. See, Hitler ended it all, but Reb Meir Shapiro was only 3 years. He had about 5 years as Rosh Yeshiva. He's someone who's greatly respected by Reb Heschel Schechter. Reb Heschel quotes him all the time in his responsa literature. So, let me mention, I hope we gave you a little bit feeling of what happened at Chachmei Lublin when the walls caved in. Is it good to have a yeshiva that centers around one individual? Look, there are pros and cons. You see with Rabbi Riskin in America that when his right hand, Rabbi Box, died, Penny Box, there never was a replacement. It just couldn't find anyone. That's the downside. On the other hand, when you have a charismatic individual like Reb Aaron Cutler, like the Maram Lublin, they're like a fire. They attract endless students. It has to be a one-man show. If they live long enough, they will realize no one is here forever, and they'll arrange success. But there's a pro and con. There's no question when you have a public trust, it will live on afterwards. You see that with YU, you see that with Torah Vidas, you see it with Chaim Berlin to a certain degree, although the successor to Rabbi Schechter now is his own son-in-law, I understand. And if I read correctly the name, it's his own son-in-law who Chalivah has to be a Dat HaMizrach. And if that's the case, Chaim Berlin has come a long way since it was founded by the East European immigrants in Bronzeville and East New York. So this is where we bring the Lublin, Chachmei Lublin. We have a lot more to do yet, but Be'ezrat Hashem, shlav, shlav, step by step. Now, I've gotten many requests, what's happening in Israel? And I wrote a simple letter, which I sent to a person I greatly admire in Flatbush, who had asked me. And I said, you can show this letter to whoever you want. And a student of mine, Rabbi Dr. Lieutenant Colonel Mark Wiener, who I'm looking at right now, he's in Chicago, I'm in Jerusalem. And he gave it to Harry Merrilis, and it went on the Emet V'Emuna blog, where more people saw it. And I've gotten a lot of nice comments on it. Unfortunately, all the comments say you hit the nail on the head, and they bring proof, so it doesn't make me that happy, because we still haven't solved problems. Now, there are a number of points I make. I want to relate to the last 2 points, but I'll mention the first three in passing, and not in the order I wrote, but first of all, why has this all broken out now? And it's not just the enmity towards Bibi Netanyahu. There is this tremendous enmity, you're all aware of it, and it's not for me to go into it now. Bibi has done great things. I just wish he'd put on a kippah, daven 3 times a day, and if he would set the example, and the president would set the example, and the chief of staff, and remember, the chief of staff is Shomer Shabbos, the president is Shomer Shabbos, but without the kippah, the world does not know, and if you put the kippah on, you may influence another 100,000 Jews to become Jews and not intermarry and assimilate. But you see, what happened here is, until now, everything was in theory. Haaretz, which is owned by the Shokin family, and the Shokin family has been interviewed more than once, and they say they're willing to lose millions of dollars and just fight the Torah and fight the Zionism. They'd be very happy with a pluralistic state, Arabs, Jews who happen to live together in the Middle East. So they've been writing articles all along that the Haredim are going to be 40% of the population in 20 years and 50% in 30 years. But you see, an article doesn't frighten anyone. It's like you're smoking and you're reading an article that smoking is the worst thing for your health. People still smoke, unfortunately. The last election made it tangible. And for the first time, they saw a clear majority of religious right-wingers, big Zionist, Kahananist, etc. And it's very frightening. This takes us to the second point I made. There has always been a left-wing dictatorship here since 1904. And this is a sad reality that great rabbis told people to stay in Europe and not to go on Aliyah. And you can yell and shout and scream at Rakefet for saying it, but these are simple, absolute facts. I have it in my family, you have it in your family. God have mercy. Only in Israel, I'm about to tell you a true story in my family that should be turned into a movie. My nephew overslept on the bus going back to his base, and he winds up in North Israel, and getting off the bus, a Yemenite lady comes over to him and says, "There's no more buses tonight. This has happened before with soldiers. Come sleep in my house." And you call your commander and tell him you'll be there tomorrow morning. Comes to the house, he sees it's Trev. She later tells the story, "My nephew didn't even drink water. I would have told him you could drink water, you could eat cookies from a box, but okay." And the next morning he goes back to his base. My sister-in-law finds out the name of the woman, and she says, "Look, I have to call her." And my sister-in-law calls her. You know, my nephew came home for Shabbos, and my sister-in-law calls her and thanks her, and they start talking. And this lady says, "Yeah, I'm married to this man who grew up in Kibbutz Mizrach." And my sister-in-law says, "Oh, I've heard about that kibbutz. My father-in-law used to have a first cousin who lived on the kibbutz." Now, Mizrach is the most treif kibbutz in Israel. They manufacture davar acher. Max, you know what I'm saying? I don't want to say pygmy, but they're the big manufacturer, Mizrach. It's the most treif kibbutz. So she starts talking with this lady. Oh my gosh. It turns out that her husband, my sister-in-law's husband, and this lady's husband are both named after this lady's father-in-law. They're both named after a grandfather from Poland, Yaakov Tzvi. And this man on the kibbutz is my father-in-law's first cousin. We had a reunion in Jerusalem, and it was something to see. My father-in-law and his cousin, they looked alike. And one is named Yaakov Tzvi, my father-in-law's son, is married to the sister-in-law. He's Yaakov Tzvi. And he tells the story how the family wanted to go in Aliyah, and they went to the Rebbe. The Rebbe said no. He ran away from home. They called the police. The police took him off the ship because he was 17. And everyone was killed. He was the only one who survived with miracles because he was 17. He was able to do hard labor for the Nazis. And of course he came to Israel with hatred for the rabbinate, hatred for religion. And it was just unbelievable to see our two families, and what a story. Your own cousin takes you in for the night. You don't even know what is happening. So you see, the second Aliyah shaped the country. They gave us the educational system, the health system, the Histadrut, the anything to Jewish agency, and they were 90% not from. You had Golda Meir, her mother a tichel down to here, her father a beard down to here. And Golda Meir, the only time in her life, she wrote this in her autobiography, the only time in her life when she thought of doing tshuva is when she was ambassador to Russia and stood outside the great synagogue on Rosh Hashanah, surrounded by tens of thousands of Russian Jews who wanted to see the ambassador from Israel. It's quite a story. Ben Gurion came from a frum home. Ben Tzvi, by the way, remained a Shomer Shabbos. You should know he was a Shomer Shabbos. Chaim Weizmann came from a frum home. It's so sad. And they remained in power. When Begin was elected, he was a gentleman, and he fired nobody. He should have fired and put in his own people. But by the time he was elected, he had mellowed. He wasn't the same Menachem Begin of the 40s, the 50s, even the 60s. All right, person has a right to mellow. I'm a little bit different. Those of you who know me, I've lived since the age of 21, Shir HaShirim, Mishle, and Kohelet all merged together. Baruch Hashem. So that's a reality, and they're used to running the show. A third part of the reality, and a very sad reality, is I rejoice that many of my grandchildren have intermarried. They've married Ashkenazim, Sephardim, have great-grandchildren, half Persian, half Moroccan, half Libyan, etc. And what granddaughters in law I have. I wish on every Jew the Yirat Shemayim and the achievement of my granddaughters in law. Very special, one by one by one. They're intermarried ethnically, what we dreamt about. Kibbutz, Goliath. But the Ashkenazim, the elite, there's a look down, they're like, there's hatred. The Tchachchachim, remember that word, Morty? I learned the word here, what went on, the Tchachchachim. Like if they could, they take away their ability to vote. Okay, so then you have the Supreme Court issue. I will only say in two words. The Likud could have used public relations. I would have said, we want to make Israel like America. Who selects the Supreme Court justice in America? No, you tell me. 100% political. The president and the Senate. So here in Israel, how do you have 15 judges who appoint chaver mi chaver? They appoint the new generation and the representation. Imagine chametz allowed in hospitals. I'm not talking halachic. I'm not a mummer. What's the big deal? It's not your chametz. What, are you teaching me something? I can look at all the chametz in the world if it's not mine. But we're a Jewish state. What chametz meant in Russia, how Jews were meisa nefesh communists, but they wouldn't eat bread on Pesach. I have many stories I can tell you. One I published, I hope. If not, I've told it in class. So the Supreme, people become enlightened. A student said to me, but in America there's a constitution. I said, we have a constitution too. We have the Torah. I don't believe that our politicians are going to do anything that's against the Torah. We're not Putin. So there's a big issue with the Supreme Court. It should have been presented differently. But that issue, you can find a compromise. The truth is that both Lapid and Gantz also wanted an ovation on the Supreme Court. Who runs the country? The people. We're a democracy. We vote. You have to respect the vote, the outcome. All right. That's the issue, but that's not the main issue. And here, unfortunately, I proved that I'm a shota or a katan. In my public talk in Beit Shemesh, which I made an exception, I spoke in public, took all my energy away, you know, to travel, to go, they took me, they brought me, nevertheless, but all right, the talk was okay. It's a memory of the Rav, I had to do for my Rebbe's memory. So I ended off the talk, the real issue is yet to come. Excuse me, the real issue is yet to come. And when it comes, it's going to be murder. And that issue is about to come right after Sukkot. And these are already two issues where the Haredi world is against Torah, not just against democracy. The draft and the Tachnut Taliba. The draft, everyone who's ever learned the Daf Gemara knows the Sugya in Saita, Daf Mem Dalet Mem Hey. Melchemet mitzvah, even a chatan v'kala have to go out and fight. Now, I've given many lectures what it means, women and the Radbaz, and I can construct an army for you that will be 100% api halacha with the women in intelligence. There's so much in computers, there's so much in the army that women can do and not be exposed to men and the front line. That's number one. Number two, and here's, which hurts me, how is Rakefet smarter than so-called Gedolei Yisrael? They want to introduce a law that if you learn in yeshiva, it's just like serving in the army. Whoever wants to introduce that law is such an ignoramus, it's beyond description. My dear students, have you ever opened the Chidushei Chatan Sofer to Masechet Sukkah in the sugya of the Chatan V'Kala and the Shushbanim, who is Pata Min HaSukkah, who is not? What is the basis of this sugya? Oseg B'Mitzvah Pata Min HaMitzvah. My dear students, Yossi, what are you doing here? It's your first year of marriage. Right or wrong? V'simachat ishto. Oh, but you have an obligation to learn Torah. The Chatam Sofer asked this, no, give me the question of the Chatam Sofer. Rabbi Avadja quotes it in his famous tshuva, if you can go in Aliyah, if you have aged parents who need you. And he goes, Rabbi Avadja quotes, Chatam Sofer asks a simple question. In Israel, we should never have to put on tefillin or daven. No, why not? Chaim, you're a male nurse, a graduate of Machon Levi's program. Oseg b'mitzvah, patur min ha-mitzvah. Terrific question. Mitzvah jishuv eretz Yisrael. I'm a farmer. Natan is driving a bus, helping people get in from as he picks up Vic on the 91, the 92, the 90, whatever. Oseg b'mitzvah. The Chatan Sofer gives us the key to understanding Torah. Hu tziva v'hu tziva. That means God commanded both. You have to do everything. You have to allow time. The fact that you're commanded to fight in the war doesn't mean you give up the study of Torah, the Gemara and Megillah with Yoshua, Mila, La'anat, whose sign are you on? Beetle tongue. You have to do both. You have to yeshiva, you have to daven. You have to put on tefillin. You have to be a nurse. Your wife is a nurse. She works in a hospital. She daven shachris and mincha. She can't say, I'm busy doing my hospital work. Allow 15 minutes to go daven. And okay, but this is a tremendous problem. I'll tell you why it's a tremendous problem. What I'm saying is so simple, it doesn't have to be said. It's Zil kribe rafu, in simple English, axiomatic. You know that word? Axiomatic. But our problem is, see, Ben Gurion still knew what Yiddishkeit was about. So when they told him there are no yeshivas left in Europe, that's the way I felt in America. As a kid of 12, I already made up my mind, I want to learn Kol HaTorah Kula. There's nothing left in Europe. Kid of 12, I already felt that. I understand what they told Ben-Gurion. So he gave an exemption, 200 yeshiva boys, Pikuach Nefesh, without their sitting and learning Yom V'Laila, Torah, Gemara, Shas, Paiskim will be forgotten. Okay. But it became broad, and then Begin, Prime Minister, he had 50,000 exemptions today. Kina v'sina v'maisa v'reshet. I pay taxes, and you don't. My kids serve in the army. Your kids exempt. See? Now, the religious element says, I'm afraid to go into the army. Rakefet Yosef Nishir in 1948, Rav Shach's son went into the army. It's a miracle he came out, Ishai Mishabas. Effie Shach, my best friend, he was Rav Shach's only son. We were in graduate school together. I sat here, he sat here. Bernard Weber, we used to get together and tell jokes about our professors in graduate school. All right, there was a miracle. But you see, today already it's a different army. Today, you won't believe this, I saw two articles already, and I checked, they're serious, that leftists are saying, we don't want any kippot in the army, and certainly not kippot through gut. And they go on and on, and I found out, I thought, you got to read the articles. Their kids became frum in the army. You take a kid, he comes into the army, he meets heads of the boys. He can't believe what he's meeting. They don't curse. They help each other. They don't look around for women to don't want to go further. They don't sleep with someone every other week or with someone else. Every other night, I should say, if they can. God have mercy. These women just demonstrated in B'nai Brak. I would say to them, ladies, when you get home, you got to check that you don't find your husband. I don't want to spell it out. These women in B'nai Brak are queens. Experience the Shabbos. See the way their husbands treat them. My wife is named Malka, but she's a queen beyond her name. The young man Harold has a wife, Annie. She's a queen. An elder gentleman here has a wife named Donna. She's a queen to the second power. Also a bit of a student of mine. Ah! They're demonstrating. See, and this is part of the problem. Ben-Gurion still knew what Judaism is. These people demonstrating are fourth and fifth generation Israelis. They have never learned Chumash with Rashi. Just think what I'm telling you. It is sad. They go to America and they represent Israel and they're told they have to go to the synagogue on the Sabbath. To speak, people are listening. Israel, Zionism, fundraising, and they're mechabed them with an aliyah. They don't know how to make a bracha. Someone who speaks perfect Hebrew, someone who spent 5 years in the army, someone who thinks in Hebrew, reads in Hebrew, curses in Hebrew, although they know Hebrew curse words. As I've said more than once, ben nida, ben zonah, these halakhic concepts. Baruch Hashem. So, you see, this is a conflict. How do we solve it? This is the challenge. And, all right, I have many ideas, but underlying all, don't be truculent, don't be critical. With derech eretz, with understanding. It's a lot better not to debate, but just to say, Kizera'e, experience, try, understand what enabled us to survive until today. How do we have a state? How did Jews still believe in Zion? What this means to us. We have many Balei Tshuva today. Anger, superciliousness doesn't help. Commitment, example, we get a lot further. You have to seek a compromise. Okay. That's one area. Let me end off with another area, which is very important, my fifth point. And here we are seeing a miracle before our eyes. Tachnit HaLiboa, core curriculum. Where did you go up, Chaim? What community? You up in language? You went to high school. You went to high school core curriculum? Oh my gosh. A vicious, malicious, hideous, brutus, depraved, degenerate, about surreptitious Jew. You had no, how did you have a heter core curriculum, beetle terror? In Israel, just the opposite. Any Israeli here? Natanya, you're going to raise children here? Do they have to learn a core curriculum? 100% mitzvot yishuv haaretz. More than that, an open Gemara, no Masechet Kedusha Daf Chaf Tet, Ha'av Chayav L'Lameid L'Vno Umanut. Rambam, Hilchot Talmud Torah, Perek Gimel. What are we talking about? You want a kid to grow up and not have the ability to make a living? Do you know how many kids I have seen from the right-wing world who throw away Kala Torah Kula? You know how many young people yours truly has saved? I'll show you emails I have. I've saved some of them. Lakewood didn't honor me b'chinam. I have a feeling that I've helped with that element there that's a little broader. Wow. How can you be opposed to core curriculum? And particularly in Israel. In Lakewood, I can understand. I don't agree. But I can understand someone telling Chaim or that he's a Neusfaf. I remember in Stamford, Connecticut, Rabbi Aaron Cutler's family, the Rosh Yeshiva's father, showing me the yeshiva there. And he says, it's all a fake. We don't teach them anything, but we just fake out the government. That I'm listening. And my own student helps him. You should know he's the lawyer. He loves Torah. He's terrific. He helps them. More than that, it bothers me on a deeper level. It's a Chil Hashem. I am making a statement to the world that core curriculum can take me away from Torah? What is core curriculum? What's the contradiction? Math, English, computer. I wish I had computer education. I'm an Amoritz. I have to depend upon Yomo. And Yomo, all right, is a miracle. And why you hired him? They did me a favor, thank God. I don't know. Why you did me a big favor? Yomo is a miracle as far as I'm concerned. Yosef Mordechai, what's the contradiction? The more I know, the more knowledge. Shas Paiskim, show me how you can understand Masechet Eruvin. I barely understand it, although I did get some good lectures on it for 2 years. But the mathematics, I'm lacking. The Rav knew mathematics. He loved mathematics. Masechet Nida, Chulin, Adami, body, structure. How can you be opposed? And what's worse is, if we're opposed, It's making a statement to the Haaretz North Tel Aviv crowd, you're friars, modern Hebrew. Ata friar. They taught me some good words here in modern Hebrew, quote unquote. I don't even know how to say it in English, a friar. Morty, give me an English for it. You're a ta friar. I've lived here too long already. Friar, you're in there. We can take advantage of you. You're going to support us.
A sucker.
A ta friar. A sucker. Okay, good. It doesn't sound good. A ta friar. You're a friar. That's the word. A sucker. You got what? Now, what did I say? A miracle is happening. And here we come to my wife's family. On my wife's father's side, sie stammt von Belzer Chassidim. They come from real Belz. I saw pictures of my grandfather-in-law as a little kid before World War I, lying a payas, the Vush Belz. That's what they come from. My wife's great-great-great-grandfather was the Shliach Tzibor for the Sar Shalom. Natan, you know who the Sar Shalom was? The first Belzer Rebbe. By the way, his wife was Malka. Malki Ach, what a family. The present Belzer Rebbe, it's a miracle story. No Hollywood movie equals it. Rabbi Arla Belz was smuggled out with miracles. We've given lectures on this in great detail in the Monday class years ago. Smuggled out in 44. He came to Israel totally broken. His wife, 11 children, I think it was, all killed by Hitler. Dafka came to Tel Aviv. He came out with his younger brother, Mordechai, who was the Bigur Rav. And Mordechai remarried here, quite a modern lady. I would say roots in Mizrahi. A lot of the Ungarische, when they came to Israel and they remained from, they became Mizrahiites. They left Munkach, they left Satma. Although there was an interview with Makar Rishon with a great Mizrahi person with a big kippah sruga in his 90s with endless children, grandchildren all over Yehuda Vishomran, and they say, how do you define yourself? He says, a satma chassid. Ich hab geboren geworden a satma chassid, and I was born and I remained. Ich hab geblieben a satma chassid. Halavai! All satma should be like that. And the Belzer Rebbe, it's a nephew to Rabbi Aaron. Mordechai had two children. He had a daughter, and then he had a son, 1948. And then he died 2 years later. He had gone through the whole Holocaust, detention, how do you survive? He died very young. This kid was taken to Yerushalayim, taken away from his mother. She was not happy. Read the history. But she finally acquiesced because they told her the whole future of Belz depends upon this little kid. When he was 18, he married the Vishnu Tzerebe's daughter. And I told her, you have to be a chassid to what I'm about to say. No Litvak can understand. I understand because I love every Jew. When he was 18 at the wedding, Chassidim, Belz Chassidim in their 80s, 90s, who were Bucky and Shas and Paiskim, stood before this kid, held the coast, said L'chaim to the Rebbe, they wouldn't drink till this 18-year-old kid answered L'chaim. That's how Belz came back. What he has built is indescribable. And he has very good advice. He has wonderful people. I actually knew one of them quite well. He's not alive. I was so impressed with this individual, Klein. And I don't have to tell you, Belz today is second only to Gair in the state of Israel. It's all over Europe. Has an American presence as well. Say that enough Yiddish. Gair is entirely in Hebrew. In Belz, you will hear a lot of Yiddish yet because there Israel's population does not yet totally outweigh the European population. And he rebuilt the shul, that shul, and how they supported. But more than that, he left the Sakhmach, he left Mukach. There was warfare here in the 70s. He joined Agudat Yisrael. He's very independent. He left Agudat Yisrael, he joined Degel HaTorah. He joined Degel HaTorah. He moved, supported Shas, moved back to Agudat Yisrael. Very independent. I wish he would join Mizrahi, B'lei V'Nefesh, the Chadalim, my people. A year ago he announced that Bells is organizing its own school system under the government and introducing total core curriculum. The Lithuanian world here went crazy. They threatened to put him in Cheirim. No, you're living here. You know what's going on. He backed down. No, what happened last week? Bells announced their entire school system is now under Shas. Just as Shas teaches the entire core curriculum, they will be teaching the entire core curriculum, and their total educational system is 100% supported by the government. This was done with such wisdom. Natan, the Litvakim, who I don't understand, it's not the Rav's classroom. I'll put it that way. It's not Rav Meisha's classroom. It's not Rav Aaron Cutler's classroom. He already was Kinech Atzmai. The Litvakim can't put Bells in Techeira. Why? It's part of Shas. Got it? Shas already? It's like a shield to protect Bells. And this has just happened. This is hot news the last week. I want to just give one more thought. I hope Rabbi Bednash is not coming in to lecture, but I see you need time to catch your breath, Morty. Am I right? What time does the shiur begin?
It starts at 11:30.
Oh, well, okay. So I have another few minutes. Okay. One more point. You see, the left is making a big mistake. Read what a guy named Rakefet just published twice on Theodor Herzl. See what's going on the ground. Give it a chance. The Haredi world is not monolithic. They have many different viewpoints there. This process of taking over the state, what do you mean taking over the state? They're going to be army people. They're going to be doctors, professionals, computer geniuses. Give it a chance. And this process has begun for years already. You take one example, and this is why some of the Haredim despise the American Haredim. They consider, they look at a guy like Chaim and consider him the biggest threat to them. They don't despise Rakefet. Why? He's not a threat. He's a kippah sruga. He's a Mizrachiite. He's proud to be a Mizrachiite. But they look at the American Haredim, you're undermining us. And I give you a simple example. Take Rabbi Baruch Chait. You've heard the name Rabbi Chait, the guitar, the songs, Asukala, Kleinim. Who am I talking about? Rabbi Baruch, he organized a high school years ago, Marava, a Haredi high school with Bagrut. Some of the kids graduate, go into the army afterwards, go into Hezda. Rav Miller's son was there, many others were there. But more than that, what he organized years ago, today there's another whole Haredi system with something like 50 schools that do Bagrut. Give it a chance. Mechon Lev has what they call a Haredi Hester among the organizers, my own students. when you bring in already 5,000 Haredim into the army, it's not the same threat, it's a different army. And 5,000 give birth to 10,000. And 10,000 ultimately bring in, but it's a process. It can't be forced. It's criminal today that it's being forced because it creates antagonism. See, when you force someone to sit and learn, he may not be happy with it. Later he'll gain the guts and say, go fly a kite. I'm not injured. But if you tell him, well, if you want to learn, there's a Gemara, I covered it with honey. A lot of good advantages. The kid starts learning. He tastes the honey. Wow. My dear students, I have one more point to make, but we'll leave that for next week, Be'ezrat Hashem. These are real problems. They're no easy solutions. But if we understand them, it helps. It hurts me very much, the army issue and the core curriculum, how the Lithuanian world is so opposed beyond my comprehension. This is not Telz, this is not Slabatka, this is not Mir, Europeishi Yeshivat. We're quite different. But this is Eretz Yisrael. Whatever we do is a mitzvah d'aseh d'oraita of Yishev Haaretz. I see a lot written lately on the Ramban and the Rambam. I wish they would have heard my shiurim. Anyone who says the Rambam didn't hold Yishev Haaretz to be doesn't know what they're talking about. It's just, it's the basis of all the mitzvah. There's some mitzvah, like Anochi Hashem Elokecha, that is so important it doesn't classify as one of the 613. It's the basis of the 613. Eretz Yisrael is the basis of Kachim, Tarim, Hedrin. Okay. My dear students, what have we done today? First of all, I want to thank everyone for coming and honoring me with your presence. I think this is the biggest classroom I've had since Corona broke out and slaughtered me. It's also the biggest classroom I've had since the Kollel reached the decision that what Rakefa teaches is a luxury beyond us. Who needs it? We need Shas and Paiskim basics. I'm very happy if you come to both classes because you get a more total picture of yours truly. And if you get a more total picture of yours truly, you're getting a more total picture of the Rav. If you don't see the Rav sitting here, you better get new glasses. He sits right here. Rav Moshe is right here. And I don't know of anyone else alive today who's spoken learning. Rabbi Yosef Eliyahu Henkin. Rabbi Moshe Feinstein, Moriah Rebbe, the Rav, chief rabbis of Israel, beginning with Rav Unterman. I have a letter from him that I'm allowed to be Masada Kedushin all over Israel. I know the laws, Baruch Hashem. A letter from 1969. And I have the original today. I don't have the original because my grandson went to register and he said, my grandfather, it was in Jerusalem, Rabbi Raubag then was running the Mordechai Sadat Titin, he knows me. He said, that's your grandfather. He said, I'm going to give you, Xeroxes, the letter says, give your grandfather the original. I had a copy, now I have the original. But spoken learning from Yitzhak Nissen, of Shlomo Goren. No, my right and left hand together, Rabbi Yosef, of Haji Yosef. Rabbi Mordechai Eliyahu, Rabbi Avram Shapiro. All right, I'll end it there. There's certain reasons why, because I'm going to go further. My Talmidah was married too. I will end it at that. I don't like the people who had to sit in jail. My dear students, I thank you for coming. Oh, I have to sign off here and ask the world. Any questions on this side of the ocean? Any questions on the other side of the ocean? Yomo is going to open it up that you can speak. 1 second.
Rebbe?
Yeah.
In Sukkara, all the credit is given to him.
No, but
Dutch recording
guy, the Dutch guy who started it. I write about that.
He brought in Harry because he needed to transit.
No, I write about that in Washington. I don't leave him out. But nevertheless, he was the Makkabe Patish. Sugihara. Any questions around the world? Okay. I want to thank you very much and staying up all night. And one second, I don't see Mark from Brooklyn. I hope he's okay. All right. Mark Licht. Rav Dak. If anyone knows him, tell him the Rebbe asked for him. Until we meet again in health and happiness, das vidanya.